James, what's all this mean? Is this sort of the first signs of the collapse of the economic system, in your opinion? What do you think it all means?
Well, thank you for having me on. And yes, I think that we can see everything that's unfolding right now is what we would expect in the long term for a system in systemic collapse. But it is always the question of what are the surprises? What are the aces up the sleeves of the would-be rulers of the world? And they always do have various things that they can pull at various parts of the collapse to make it collapse in a different direction or to bring about a different trajectory altogether. So right now, we're just trying to read the tea leaves, as it were, to look at what's likely to come. And in the very short term, the biggest thing that's going to be happening this week is the Federal Open Market Committee is going to be meeting this Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're going to have a press conference, and Chairman Ben Bernanke is going to give a little lecture on the state of the economy after the Wednesday meeting. So that's what the markets are really looking forward to this week. And as preparation for that, we see a lot of speculation going on right now, for example, in gold and others, on the expectation that the Federal Reserve is going to at least start talking about quantitative easing tapering. They're going to stop putting the pedal to the metal, as it were, with the printing press. And this is causing markets to start to try to price that in, because obviously if you start to take away the heroin from the system of the junkie, the economy, it's going to start reacting in various ways. And one of those, of course, is the strengthening of the dollar. If they're printing less, then people's expectations will be that the dollar will start to gain value. So the dollar will strengthen, and that will cause such things as gold and other commodities to fall. And so that's already starting to be priced in a little bit, as people expect. There's probably going to be some mention of quantitative easing tapering in this. So that's the near term. But in the longer term, yes, I think we should be looking at bond markets, especially, of course, in Japan, as I've been talking about. And as you say, the Chinese banking sector, also something that's bringing a lot of concern to people, as China really does start to cool down in a way that that shows that perhaps there's something fundamentally slowing down in the Chinese economy.
All right. We're going to be back in just a moment with James Corbett right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett, and we're talking about what's going on economically. Now, basically, of course, it's very, very hard if you're not a trained economist, and believe me, I'm not a trained economist, but I am sort of an amateur at this. I've been watching it for 50 years. I've seen the cycles. And what is really happening this last week or so is interest rates are beginning to rise. Interest rates are beginning to rise here in the United States. And as interest rates rise, well, the price of bonds falls. Interest rates are beginning to rise in Europe, and the price of bonds are falling. Interest rates are beginning to rise in China, and certainly there's real questions about the stability of China, because China has borrowed so much money, and basically nobody even knows where it all has gone to. And basically, it's a serious question as to whether this foreshadows the upcoming collapse, not maybe in a week or two, maybe not even a month or two, but down the line, as the interest rates goes up, the price of the bonds goes down, sooner or later this begins to have an impact on the stock market. Now, what happens? Why, initially, of course, people get out of bonds because, of course, interest rates go up, price of bonds go down, and the last thing you want to be is in bonds when the price is collapsing. So what do you do with your money? Well, you put it in the stock market, and it should be good for the stock market, at least for the time being. And yet, if you look at so many of our companies, certainly they are not doing as well as we'd like them to. We know that certainly some of our cities are having real problems. In fact, certainly Detroit is on the edge of total bankruptcy. And this is not just Detroit alone. Many of our cities have made financial commitments that they can't honor anymore. And certainly in Detroit, why they're suggesting to the creditors, the people who've loaned money to Detroit, they'll give them pennies on the dollar. It's either you take it or you won't get anything. We'll simply go bankrupt. And James Corbett, you sort of bring us up to date on your thoughts on what's going on. Now, remember, this is a new audience for the next minute or two. Then we'll bring the other people back on. So if you want to repeat yourself, don't be bashful.
Well, I let me just reiterate then that absolutely I think that we are heading towards some sort of collapse, and I think there's a big question mark over what sort that might be, because again, people tend to think of economic collapses as just being one thing that happens in the same way, but there are different ways that can happen, and that's something I wrote about in the recent International Forecaster. But I think you're exactly right that the bond market is something we need to be paying attention to, and that's something that the Bank of England's Andrew Haldane was talking about last week, where he actually said we've intentionally blown the biggest bond bubble in history, which is pretty ominous sounding words. And if you feel uncomfortable with that, then congratulations, because I think this is something to feel uncomfortable about.
Hold a thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly James was simply quoting an English writer who said that we have the biggest bond bubble in history. And of course, you know what happens to bubbles. They burst. Go right ahead, James.
That's right. That was Bank of England Director of Financial Stability, Andrew Haldane, who said they've intentionally blown the biggest bond bubble in history. And I think we've seen this, of course, through such things as the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing and their outright purchases of treasuries, long-term treasuries, has obviously brought those prices down and kept those rates up. But we are going to see the collapse of this. We are going to see this ending at some point. And that will either come because the Federal Reserve, for example, will just stop buying bonds, or it will come because even when they are buying bonds, it will no longer have an effect on the markets, and they just won't be able to keep that market up. So it is going to come to an end. The punch bowl will have to be taken away at some point. And when it is, and however that comes about, there's going to be severe ramifications for the economy. And of course, that's not just the economy in the U.S., but around the world, and especially in places like Europe, where, of course, the Eurozone crisis continues to simmer. And the key part of that, the essential part of that ingredient of that crisis, is the sovereign debt of those various nations, which, of course, is supported by treasuries, which they have to sell in order to finance their debts. And if those yields start rising or start spiking or start going up precipitously, then you're going to have a big problem as the Eurozone countries basically struggle to try to finance their debts, and things start to fall apart there. So again, they can keep continuing to try to add stimulus to this, but all they're doing every time they do is to basically reinflate or inflate even further that bond bubble. And that just makes it all the more ominous when that bond bubble breaks, that it will really collapse the system as a whole.
Well, we see that Greece is having more problems, and they're going to have to lend Greece more money so that they can keep certainly paying out all their welfare benefits. But you can't keep lending Greece money indefinitely. You lend money, and sooner or later, it's going to have to be paid back. And the same thing, I'm sure, is true for the other countries in southern Sydney, Europe. And of course, a lot of the German people are very unhappy. They're taking the hard-earned earnings of the German people and funneling them into the countries in the southern part where the people don't want to work so hard. They just want to get all those wonderful benefits. And what's wrong with, free food? And what's wrong with free health care? And what's wrong with large pensions? Well, what's wrong with them is if you don't have any money, you can't pay them. Well, of course, we'll just borrow the money. We'll borrow it from the Germans. But I think that the Germans, my understanding, are getting pretty unhappy with this. Of course, Mrs. Merkel is basically, in my opinion, a hardline socialist who sold herself to the German people, as a conservative. But aren't they getting just a little unhappy with her? Isn't there tremendous unrest over in Europe, funneling money from the Northern Europe to Southern Europe so they can maintain the European currency, which is based on a fraudulent concept that we can have a one currency with entirely different countries, some in which the people want to work, and others where the people simply want to live off the largesse of the government. What are your thoughts?
Well, you're right about that overall sentiment, of course, especially the Germans feel like they're carrying the Eurozone on their back, and in many ways they really are. So I think there's a lot of resentment there, and we're entering a particularly interesting period because right now they're entering an election cycle in Germany. So we're going to start seeing the type of election cycle rhetoric from Angela Merkel and her cronies there in the German government as they attempt to basically buy the votes of the voters. So we're going to see some I'm sure changes in rhetoric and operating procedures from the government over the next few months. But of course, this will just be a temporary phenomenon as they go through their election cycle. So I'm not sure whether we'll be able to put any stock in what happens. Of course, generally, I would say that the markets are a pretty dead place in the summer. Basically, people lock in their savings in May and come back after Labor Day, as the old sayings go. So they there doesn't tend to be much movement in markets in the summer. But I think we're probably, just like in every other aspect of the economy, we're in some very strange times. I think there's some rooms for some very big moves during these doldrum summer months, not only in Europe, where things will undoubtedly continue to simmer and perhaps boil over with more protests and the like in some of the southern countries that continue to fall apart, like Greece, as you said. But also, I think not only things like the Federal Open Market Committee talking about quantitative easing, which can have a big effect on the market, and we might see some big swings in commodity prices and other things as a result. But also, of course, we have a wag the dog phenomenon going on right now at the political level. The Obama administration scrambling from all of the numerous scandals that have popped up, and suddenly, lo and behold, they've discovered this with 100% certainty that Assad has used chemical weapons in Syria, which is obviously, I think, a shamefaced wag-the-dog scenario to try to get attention back on Syria and off of the domestic political scandals in the U.S. But I see this very much shaping up into the possibility of further military confrontation and overt military confrontation in Syria this summer. And that's exactly one of the main talking points right now at the G8 summit, where they're meeting in Belfast right now. And we have, of course, Russian President Vladimir Putin basically being the staunch opponent of this, and the other G8 members trying to convince him that they really need to go guns blazing into Damascus. So it's going to be a very interesting summer in a lot of ways, as opposed to usual business as usual for the markets this summer.
Well, one of the things I think that has a lot of people puzzled is what's happening to gold and silver. Certainly with all of the financial instability in the world, you would think the price of gold and silver would be going up, but it isn't. I talk to my people, my friends who are dealers in gold and silver, and they say, you know, sure, you can go ahead and order your silver, you know, $21, $22 an ounce. Of course, it'll be 6 weeks before it gets here, and it may not come at all because they didn't tell us it'll be 6 weeks, but with nobody sells, well, there's not going to be any silver. You can buy it for $21 or $22 an ounce. The only trouble is you can't get delivery on it. Well, have you heard any complaints of that sort?
I have heard various things over the past few months, and we keep continuing to see stories trickling out about the incredible surge in demand for physical gold and silver versus what's happening in the paper markets. And just another example of that, last week there was a jewelry dealer in China that was offering a slight discount on gold in their store, and it drew 10,000 people to the store for that sale. So again, I think places like China and India are very much aware of what's happening right now, very much catching on to the incredible deal that's really available right now if you can get your hands on physical precious metals, especially gold, which is popular in China and in India. Again, I think this is speaking to that detachment, the decoupling of the market from what's happening in the paper markets versus what's happening in the physical markets. So I think that the smart investors who are in precious metals are very much trying to or demanding physical delivery rather than the paper stocks that really aren't worth the money that they're printed on.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question for our guest James Corbett about what's going on in the financial markets, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. But I think we're living in really some of the most dangerous financial times, and certainly you're not being told the truth. Remember, the media is controlled. You're going to have to certainly begin to rely on other sources of information. Fortunately, we now have the internet, and there's some wonderful articles up there, some wonderful writers. Of course, certainly they also have their agents planted there to put out faulty information and say, oh, no, just invest in this stock, that stock. The other stock, you're going to be fabulously wealthy beyond your wildest dreams, and unfortunately, I suspect it isn't true. I've seen so many people get into speculative stocks and suddenly be just whipsawed. And my wife was talking to a gentleman today who said they've almost been impoverished because he'd taken advice from somebody he thought he could trust. And of course, speculative stocks do not get into speculative stocks, ladies and gentlemen, unless you can afford to lose the money. And so often this happens. I'm sure you've run into that, haven't you?
Unfortunately, yes. I've heard many stories of people who have lost significant amounts of money because they bet on some penny stocks that didn't turn out the way that they'd heard they would.
And of course, they forgot the three basic rules of investing: diversify, diversify, diversify. And don't put all your eggs in one basket, and don't invest it in a speculative stock unless you're prepared to lose the money. You have to be prepared to lose it. But so many people want to put their nest egg because they want to get fabulously wealthy, and unfortunately, most of them aren't smart enough to do that. So what would you tell people today? I know you're not putting yourself forward as a financial expert, but what should people be doing to protect themselves? And again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-2295. As we see, certainly the interest rates beginning to go up, the value of bonds beginning to drop. What should people be doing?
Well, I would refer them back to my last edition of the International Forecaster, where I wrote an editorial about the four of the different collapse scenarios that we might be seeing. Because again, it's important to understand that there are many different ways that economic collapses can play out. And that can be anything from a hyperinflationary collapse to a deflationary collapse to something completely unexpected. And in every different scenario, there are different classes of investment that would perform better or worse. And I think it's important for us to understand that and how that works. Because again, if we only think of an economic collapse as always happening in the same way, then there's really, there would be no difference in investment strategies. But I don't think that that's the case. I think we can be prepared for different things depending on what scenario you think is most likely to play out. I think most people tend to think of the most likely scenario as being a hyperinflationary collapse, because that's what we've been hearing about quite a lot. But the deflationary proponents have certainly made a good case for their scenario, and we have seen basically a deflationary type depression is more apt description of what we've seen so far in this collapse than the hyperinflationary death spiral of the dollar. So at this point, anyway, there's some debate over which way the house of cards is going to topple, and each different scenario involves a different investment strategy.
Remember, diversify, diversify, diversify. We'll be back in just a moment with James Corbett. Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is James Corbett. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295, again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. But I'm preparing a talk I'm going to be giving in Colorado at the end of next month. And, Chris, when you're going to give a talk, you've got to go ahead and kind of verify everything to be absolutely certain. And fortunately, we have the Internet. Miraculous, certainly, it's a means by which they can watch everything and listen to everything that we do, because they can watch you if you have a little camera there, and they can listen to you as well. Certainly, if you have a cell phone or certainly a computer there, they can actually have software there. So even when it's turned off, they can listen to your conversations. But basically, because one of the fascinating things I was coming up with today is the fact that there are 12 banks that control 69%, almost 70%, 69% of all the financial assets of our country. 12 banks, actually six of them control 60%. That means the other, certainly 5,500 banks, control 31%. That's an awful lot of concentration of power in the hands of a very small number of people, isn't it, James?
It certainly is, absolutely.
Well, should we be concerned about that, or is this certainly the way the system works? And we have to have powerful banks so that we can have an economy that works well.
Well, that's certainly what they want you to believe, isn't it? Obviously, I think that that's not the case. I think decentralization and diversification are the best possible solutions for any large system like the one that that is currently in charge of the world finance and world banking. And absolutely, I think that the tendency that the so-called would-be elite want to go in is to bring everything together under one overarching unifying system, and ultimately spearheaded by one central bank of central banks, the Bank for International Settlements in Basel. But I think that if that's what they want, I think we should be heading in the exact opposite direction, which is diversification, keeping things local, and trying to build up alternatives as much as possible.
I certainly concur with you, and unfortunately, they keep passing legislation back in Washington, D.C. to correct things, and things keep getting worse and worse. And since the last major legislation, why, of course, it's designed, of course, to break up this concentration of power, we find more and more wealth in fewer and fewer hands. But you seldom, if ever, will hear this talked about, certainly through the regular medium. Thank goodness for the Internet. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Without the Internet, I think we would all be much poorer intellectually and perhaps even physically, because it would be a lot easier to bring about their plans without an informed populace. And I think, again, it's important to understand, yes, of course, there is still a large section of the population that's under the sway of the mainstream media and the financial talking heads and everyone else who's trying to sell a pack of lies. But there is every single day more and more people waking up to the matrix that we're living in, and are really questioning the system. And I get to see this from my own perspective, having a website and doing the work that I do. I get to see this on a daily basis and get to hear some of the feedback from people who are tuning out of the mainstream media and tuning into the alternative. So we are making a difference in that regard. And I think it is going to make a difference in the long run. Obviously, if I didn't, I wouldn't be here talking right now. And one of the main differences it can make is, again, if enough people understand that the system that we're being led into is at its heart fundamentally evil and fundamentally designed to bring about the most possible suffering for the most possible people, then we can start to take the steps that will be necessary to combat that. And again, that means sometimes it means doing the difficult thing and taking your money out of the nice, quote unquote, safe financial institutions, the big six banks, etc., and putting them into local credit unions or into local businesses or into local alternative currencies or other ways that you can get out of the system as it's being built around us. And again, that's not always the easy route to take, and it's not always fun to do such things, but I think it is necessary for our survival ultimately. Again, if we don't have an alternative system in place for when they do pull the plug on this system, then we will certainly be in a much worse position than we would otherwise.
I agree with you totally. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got Bob calling from Sudbury, Ontario. Hi, Bob. How are we doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay.
Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Corbett a question.
Go ahead.
Bob Chapman always said that Canada would do better than most countries if there was a crash or a collapse in the economy.
All right, I think that's a very valid question. I mean, certainly, what about Canada? Certainly, some people say that their monetary system's better off than ours. They don't have the tremendous debt. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think we're coming up on the break. So.
Okay, well, but we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call.
Clouds gather all across the sea. Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land for sale. As we raise in a solemn prayer.
Okay, well, we've got Bob calling from Sudbury, and he wants to know, what about the Canadian financial system? Is it perhaps better than the American financial system? What are your thoughts?
Well, the official line is that the Canadian banking system is the soundest banking system in the world and has been rated as such by the World Economic Forum for the past 3 years in a row. And this is due to a number of factors, but basically the idea is that the big five Canadian banks are really not just banks, but really financial conglomerates, and their vast size compared to the Canadian economy helps to stabilize the system. They also haven't been as involved in some of the derivative speculation, etc., as was involved in the American crisis. So the official line is that the Canadian banking system is sound and will be more likely to weather any economic storm. But there is a huge dark looming cloud on the horizon for Canada right now. It's the housing bubble, which is set to burst, according to even such prestigious institutions as the Bilderberg Connected. The Economist just came out with a report on that very subject. So it looks like the Canadian housing market is in some serious problems, is about to encounter some serious problems, and as a result could be going through the type of correction that we saw, for example, in the U.S. housing market a few years ago, and that could definitely destabilize the Canadian economy generally. So even if the banking system is quote-unquote sound, I think there's still some problems in the Canadian economy, and I think the long-term goal of the globalists is to make sure that every country and every nation on the planet does face some sort of major economic crisis. I don't think there's going to be a country that will come through it unscathed. And of course, the solution to this is going to be to try to combine everyone into one big system that will inherently be more stable, or so they want you to believe. So Canadians, I don't think have any should be quite so smug about their system. I think that it is on always on the verge of collapse as well. And I think the housing crisis is going to be the next stage in the Canadian problems.
So Bob, does that answer your question?
Yes. Well, yes and no.
Okay, fine.
Happy to hear it. We're in good shape, but then the housing crisis is a downer.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess, of course, it's Bruce. The part is James Corbett. We had Sydney Bob calling from Sudbury, Ontario, asking about the stability of the Canadian banking system. James had commented that certainly the ratings of many of the financial institutions has said that Canada is the strongest banking system in the world. However, of course, Sydney James points out that they have a housing bubble. It's going to burst just like the one did in America here back in 2008, and basically so that no system is safe. And basically, of course, the globalists who run the world want to create problems for everybody, so we will all be forced into this new one-world economic financial system. Remember, they want a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and a one-world religion. That's their goal. Anything else you'd like to ask before we let you go, Bob?
No, that's it. Thank you very much, and you do very, very, very good work.
God bless. Thank you. And let's certainly go to Bruce, who's calling from Durant, Michigan. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And let's see if we can pick up Bruce. Guess we can't, so we're going to have to. Before we then go on, James, I want you to tell our listeners how they could get in touch with you, how they can get in touch with the International Forecaster, and how they can get the various information that you write for your own organization.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the opportunity. So for people who are interested in the International Forecaster, I would suggest that they go to The International Forecaster. That's theinternationalforecaster.com. All one word, theinternationalforecaster.com, where you can find some of the examples of articles that I've myself and others have written for the Forecaster, and you can also get a free introductory copy if it's your first time taking a look at the Forecaster. And of course, you can also sign up for a subscription there, or you can write in via mail. You can write P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883. And you can find out more information about the forecaster that way. If people are interested in my own work, I'm at CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. I have thousands of hours of free media there available for download, and I also have DVDs for sale, and you can also sign up for my own subscriber newsletter, which comes out once a week.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Bruce, who's calling from Durham, Michigan. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And ladies and gentlemen, I've been at this for over 50 years. I will tell you, I think we're entering the most dangerous financial time of your life and of mine. Bruce, did you have a question or comment for our guest?
Mr. Corbett is such an expert in finance. Maybe he can help me. I'm torn between what is right and wrong. You know, especially with my Christian brothers, they'll say these guys are good, these guys are bad. There's so much confusion out there, and such mass deception. Why do so many Americans hate Iran? Is it because I got three reasons? Is it because they're anti-Israel? And Americans are so pro-Israel, and I don't really believe that. Is it because they're petulant and they're mad at what happened in 1979? Or is there some financial thing? I got a buddy who always he touches his forefinger and his thumb like there's a coin there. Whenever I bring up conspiracy, he just says, no, no, it's money, it's money. Everything is money. Everything's materialism. Has Iran officially made it a policy and now follows the policy of not accepting dollars or dollar-based oil? Do they exchange oil only on the basis of gold? And did Iraq do that just before we invaded Saddam Hussein? Do we hate Iran and all the Shiites, who, by the way, are a minority? Why are we so against the Shiites and so pro-Sunni? Is it because, like, the Saudis and the Emirates want to keep the dollar as the reserve currency for oil and the Iranians do not?
All right, that's a very good answer. Pardon me, a very good question. James, how is your deal with Bruce? He wants to know something about our relationships with Iran, and so what's this about Iran certainly not dealing in dollars for their oil? Could you sort of develop those thoughts?
Well, Iran has, to a large extent, been forced into a corner by the sanctions that have been put on them to basically start finding different ways of trading for their oil. So, for example, there was the oil for rupees exchange going on with Iran and with India, and they've been trading oil for gas with Turkey, etc. So they've been finding other ways around the dollar denomination of oil, and obviously that does play into some of the concern that America, i.e. the U.S. government, has with Iran, because a large oil producer not going along with the petrodollar, which has been propping up the dollar's so-called value for the past few decades, is I suppose a worrying sign for the status quo. As to why American people generally go along with it, I honestly think it's just because they're being told to. Iran is demonized on if not a daily basis, certainly on a frequent basis in American media. And I think people respond to that. And it is for a host of economic and geopolitical reasons. I think there's also some jockeying for position going on in terms of the Middle East generally. And the dominant player, all things being equal, certainly would be Iran. But Iran is not an ally of the United States or Israel. So it is seen, it's demonized, basically, because obviously the U.S. would prefer one of their client puppet states gets into that position of power in the region, or at least a few different states struggle over that power.
Are they all solidly with the dollar and would never go off the reservation? They'll never be our enemies?
I'm sorry, which state?
No, which country are you talking about, Bruce?
Well, it would have to be Kuwait, Abu Dhabi, probably Bahrain.
All right. Okay, are these countries then firmly aligned with us, or are they simply would they get away from dollar denominated oil if America would begin to falter economically? What's the situation over there? So the dollar is the dominant force, and dollars and oils go together. But is that situation changing?
I don't see that changing anytime in the near future, at least not with some sort of large destabilizing event. And certainly small states like Kuwait and Bahrain are, I think, safely tucked in the U.S. back pocket at this point. And even some of the larger players like Saudi Arabia, I think, are not going to be leaving the plantation anytime soon because, of course, the Saudi royal family, quote-unquote, is an invention of the West and has been propped up by the West for decades and decades now. And I don't see them leaving that fold anytime soon. Again, America is sort of the biggest person on the block, and they can dictate what's happening right now. And I just don't see that there's anyone going to leave that fold without some sort of large destabilizing event to take its place. So at this point, I really don't see any seismic changes happening in that region. I think that the battle lines have been drawn, and I think Iran is very much on the enemy list.
And basically, of course, I think, Bruce, what you have to understand is that the United States is at war with Iran. They're not going to tell the American people that. But when you put sanctions on a country, that is an act of war. And basically, of course, we have put sanctions on Iran. We have made it extremely difficult for them to sell their oil. I mean, that's the major product that they have to get a currency so they can certainly import items. And we've told other countries not to trade in dollars. So basically, of course, Iran then is trading with India, it's trading with China for gold, it's trading with other countries for gold, and it's circumventing the use of the dollar, which of course has infuriated us. We want to crush them and force them to essentially give up their research, the supposed research for developing nuclear weapons. But we are at war with Iran. Sanctions are war. We're putting sanctions on there. We've badly damaged their economy. Prices have soared. And I think there are a lot of people over there who are very angry with us. But, you know, things have a way of coming around those who do evil and wicked things. Sometimes they come back to bite you. And I'm really very, very concerned that what we're doing to Iran could very well have serious implications here in the not-too-distant future. Anything else you wanted to ask, Bruce?
Well, so you think then it's a combination of they could potentially sway others who hurt our standard of living if they get their way, plus just preventing what happened in 1979, and they want to get them back under like a Shah or something like that. So the combination of those two is not to...
James, do you have any thoughts for Joe or Bruce before we let him go?
Well, nothing that I haven't said before. I think, again, it's a combination of economic and geopolitical factors at play, and it will be interesting to watch, especially over the next few months, as the newly elected Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, comes into power and promising more transparency with the nuclear program there in Iran, etc. So we'll see how that plays into this mix and whether there will be some sort of détente or some sort of easing of sanctions, but I'm not holding my breath for any major change in that situation anytime soon.
James,
did Saddam Hussein try to bend over backwards to stop what happened to him, and we just kept trumping up stuff every time he'd bend a little, we'd push him over even more, trumping up week after week. So,
basically, but Bruce, nothing as it appears to be. Remember, we actually, they had a democratically elected government there in Iran in 1953. We toppled it, then we toppled the Shah, and we installed the Ayatollahs. Nothing as it appears to be. Don't believe what you're reading in the newspaper. We're going to have to let you go because we've got another caller. But our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. If you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. And let's go to Joseph, who's calling from Georgia. Hi, Georgia. Do you have Joseph, do you have a question or comment for us?
Yeah, you know, just real quick, with all this Arab Spring, you know, the big, you know, all of this outside influence affecting all of that stuff. And how much outside influence really is going into Turkey to affect, you know, it's like it's another replay. It's in the square and everything. And, you know, then they pump in all this money and any dissidents, then they, you know, how much outside influence is really affecting this unrest in Turkey?
Well, basically, do you want to comment on that at all, James? You want to comment on what's going on in Turkey?
Well, I think it's a fair question, because my first thoughts when I see these types of spontaneous quote-unquote protests is that, yes, we've seen this time and time again, and generally there is some sort of outside influence that's trying to shape things up, like the Arab Spring, etc. So it is a valid question, but from what I've seen of the what's happening in Turkey right now, I'm not convinced that it falls into that pattern, especially because Erdogan has been such a staunch ally of the U.S. and Israel and the West lately, especially with their actions regarding Syria. So I don't see how this would be in the interests of the usual players to try to gin something up against Erdogan at this point. So I just don't know if it falls into that pattern. I haven't seen any evidence that it does.
Joseph, if you have an opportunity, if you can certainly listen to the program we did just before this one, we were interviewing John Quirk, who just came back from Turkey. And he's simply pointing out that the demonstrations that are going on over there are the secular Turks who do not want to be dragged into a radical Islamic state that the government's gradually putting pressure on to force women to wear veils, to take off lipstick. And the people over there, the women, the men, they don't want this radical form of Islam. But of course, we're behind the current government there. The whole movement is being pushed by a man named Gulen, who lives in Pennsylvania, who is one of the richest men in the world. He has somewhere between $40 to $60 billion. He got that from the drug trading in drugs. And basically, of course, he is an agent of the CIA. As we create problems, we finance both sides. We finance the radical Islamists, and then we finance the people who oppose the Islamists, because out of, of course, the conflict comes this new society that we seem to be intent upon imposing upon that part of the world. If you have a chance, listen to the program we did last hour. It'll be posted at RadioLiberty.com on Soundwave 2000. Go there, listen to it. It's a very good appraisal of what's really going on in Turkey. Anything else you wanted to ask before we let you go?
No, then it just seems like they're trying to get people to radicalize it across the Muslim world because they want uprising themselves, so then they got to get it stirred up and create the big enemy, I guess.
You got to have an enemy if you're going to have a war, Joseph. If you don't have an enemy, how are you going to have a war? That's why we financed the Nazis before the war. That's why we financed communism. That's why we put Fidel Castro in power. We installed Fidel Castro, and if you doubt that, you need to see my DVD. It's called World Revolution, where I interviewed the American ambassador to Cuba, Earl Smith. He was the ambassador when we put Fidel Castro in power. The best enemy we could create. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, James, what are your thoughts? We've got a few minutes. What are your thoughts you'd like to leave with the listeners for this coming week and this coming time?
Well, let me just say, first of all, that you're exactly right about Fethullah Gulen and his network, his multi-billion-dollar network being run out of Pennsylvania. And, of course, he was brought in by the CIA, when he was wanted in Turkey. And people who are interested more in Gulen's background, I suggest they go and look at BoilingFrogsPost.com, the website of FBI whistleblower Sibel Edmonds, who's been writing about it at length for a number of years. So you're exactly right on that. And again,
you mind repeating that website again, the Sibel Edmonds website where they can learn about Gulen? What is it?
That's BoilingFrogsPost.com, as in we're all frogs boiling in the water. BoilingFrogsPost.com.
She's a very, very courageous woman, Sibel Edmonds. We've interviewed her, and I agree with you. Sibel Edmonds, and if you haven't read her book, it's at the that's a classified woman. It's well worthwhile. Unfortunately, we can't carry it because she made the mistake of publishing it with Amazon. And the only people who can get it, because we can't get a discount on it, but you can get it from them, read Sibel Edmonds' work and go to her website. Go ahead, James.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's exactly right. And again, I think you're exactly right on the overall strategy, which is to create the enemies and then to go in and use that as an excuse to basically take control over the area. And I don't think we have to elaborate too much on the numerous examples of that throughout history, just to say that that's basically the modus operandi for that, certainly that region of the globe. And also generally, I think it's always about propping up and creating and fostering dictators and tyrants in order to give that excuse. And I suppose on this side of the globe, of course, we still have North Korea, which is still a simmering issue, but has gone under the radar now. So it is interesting to note some of the latest developments on that. For example, on Saturday, North Korea said they're going to strengthen their nuclear deterrent. And then on Sunday, they turned around and asked for more talks with the United States. So again, we see the same type of thing playing out in the Asia-Pacific, just on a different scale, I suppose, from what's happening in the Middle East. And I think that's something that we should all be very, very wary of, because, again, this is the way that they try to corral the population into going along with wars and other agendas that go against what's in the American people's interests and for this global would-be elite.
Well, of course, you're in contact with people all across the world. And I wonder, Sydney, have you heard them talking about the very real threat to America of an EMP attack, an electromagnetic pulse attack, or even the possibility of a solar flare? Are people that you're in contact with talking about this a very real possibility?
Only as a false flag scenario. I don't know of many people who are...
Hold that thought. Hold the thought. We'll be back in a moment. Go right ahead, James. I'd just be interested in your thoughts. Go right ahead.
The EMP scenario, the EMP attack on America, I think the only real talk I'm hearing about on that is either from people who are trying to fearmonger about North Korea and Iran, or from people who are positing that as a potential false flag attack. And my money would be on the latter. If it took place, my first suspicion would certainly be that it was a self-inflicted wound if that were to occur. I don't think that North Korea or Iran are either planning that or really capable of doing that. So again, it's something that people need to be aware of. I think people need to understand what an EMP attack is and how it could basically topple the infrastructure of the United States, or at least vast swaths of it. So people need to be aware of that, and also how to protect their electronics from such things, because obviously this would fry the electronics of anything within eye line of the blast. So again, I have actually a podcast episode on that specific topic that people can look at in my archives on CorbettReport.com.
All right, fine. Well, do you have a parting thought for us before we let you go?
I'll just say that people should at least keep their eye on the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, meeting this Tuesday and Wednesday, and I think it's going to have some effect on the markets for this week anyway, and we'll have to keep our eye also on Syria, because I think something's going to come out of this G8 conference, and we'll have to see what shape that takes.
Well, we'll look forward to talking to you next week at the same time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty.